scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla in the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, we are underway. It is a Tuesday, April 29th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg. Aaron Vickers will join us a little bit later on this hour. We got lots to talk about, and there is a ton going on around the NHL. We've got some Flames topics to get to with our NHL insider Frank Saravalli in just moments, some news out of Vancouver, the postseason, and a whole lot more. Yeah, it is time for our NHL insider Frank Saravalli to kick us off this hour. He's brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. How are you on this Tuesday?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Where are we? Are you at home in Philly, or are you on the road again?
I'm home. I tend to think that the best place to watch the first round is at home. When there's eight series going on, and if you're in one place, you're locked into that one series. Like, I was in Dallas last week for game two, and I was like, in the press box, like, can we turn on one of the other games here? Like, I'm missing stuff. And, yeah, fortunately, that's not how it works.
Okay, yeah, exactly. As much as they should be on your schedule and putting your needs first, it doesn't usually end up working that way. We will get to the Stanley Cup playoffs in just a little bit, but wanted to kick it off with you on a Flames topic or two, and One of the things that we've talked a lot about, or a little about anyway, since the Flames season came to an end, we'll find out in less than a week now whether or not Dustin Wolf is a Calder Trophy finalist, but we're all expecting him to be. And he's eligible for a contract extension as early as July 1st, as his two-year deal will come to an end at the end of next season, so he'll be halfway through it. I'm just curious, knowing that he's eligible for a contract extension and knowing what he just did as an NHL rookie, and knowing how big a part of this team's future Dustin's going to be, like, I'm curious as to where your brain would go when thinking about what his next contract might look like.
Yeah, I would try and get him signed to a midterm contract. And that's not a bridge deal. That's not an 8-year deal, but something in that 5 to 6 year range, I think, is probably a sweet spot. You're going to have to purchase. So he'll be 25 at the end of next season.
Yes.
His birthday's in April, and you'll have to buy then two seasons of RFA, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, 25-26-year-old season and 26-27. So that would a 5 to 6 year, you can hear my brain spinning, I'm doing math on the fly, a 5 to 6 year deal will buy 3 to 4 years of,
yes,
unrestricted free agency, and would then take him through his age 31 or 32 season. I think that's like a really appropriate length. You've got a fair amount of risk due to the fickle nature of the position, but you've also got a guy who has taken the reins a lot earlier than many starting goalies at that age, has proven to be an elite performer at both the minor league and NHL level, and is someone that can be a franchise cornerstone that, if you're able to get ahead of it early enough, that you might find some real value. And the reason I say not purchasing years 7 and 8 of the deal is it's going to be really expensive to do so. And so I think there's the appropriate amount of risk and reward going, likely, if you can convince the Wolf camp, with a deal of that length.
Yeah, I keep going back. It's funny you say 5 or 6. I keep going back to the 6x6 that Jordan Binnington signed in March of 2021. I know the ages were a little bit different, but in terms of like what they had accomplished and the amount of NHL time under their belt, it was somewhat similar. Obviously, Binnington had won the Stanley Cup and had led the Blues there in 2019, but he signed a 6x6 in 2021. Economics have changed pretty dramatically since then, so the number on the AAV might have to be higher than that $6 million, but that 6-year term is the same one that I keep going back to. So I'm it's interesting that's kind of the exact same place that your brain's at.
Yeah, I'd say there's a couple things different. Yes, he had won the Stanley Cup by then, but also was a goalie that really didn't have much pedigree. I mean, think back to the season he won the Cup. They were trying to send him to the ECHL to start the year, and he said, no, that's not happening. Let me see if I can find a place elsewhere in the AHL. And luckily for him, Providence needed a guy, and he ends up going on this wild run and winning the Cup. And he was also older. I think probably a better comp in terms of pedigree and thought process and also relatively immediate NHL impact is probably the deal that Thatcher Demko signed in Vancouver. Now, that deal, obviously, it purchased less UFA years than what Binnington got. And by the way, easy for us to say now, but that Binnington deal was one that the St. Louis Blues were looking to offload 18 months ago. That was before Four Nations success, with the Blues missing the playoffs. They had kind of felt like, of all the deals they had on their books, whether it was some of the older aging defensemen with no trade clauses and Binnington's contract, that might have been one of the easier ways to free up some cap space and flexibility. And in the end, funny to say, no one wanted Binnington at that ticket. So it's one of those things, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
Yeah. Yep. The only other, you know, there's the Flames have got some different RFAs on their book right now. The only other one that I am really interested in terms of the type of term we might see is Matt Coronato and his deal. Like, is that one that the Flames are able to go long term on? Are they able to get the Coronato camp to forego the betting on himself 2-year bridge and instead be able to get a 7 or an 8-year deal for Matt Coronato? I don't know what that's going to end up looking like. I think the Flames would be willing to go long term if the number was right, but that's the only other one that I'm really interested in terms of, are we talking about a bridge or are we talking about a long term deal?
Yeah, I think generally I subscribe to the theory of, if you're a believer in the player, sometimes even before the player is a believer in himself, buy as many years as possible, because those deals tend to almost always age really well. And yeah, like, again, there is always risk. There's risk involved with injury, et cetera. But there aren't many deals for young players that are buying up RFA years that you end up regretting, because what you end up doing is you buy all of the best years of that player's prime, and it gives that player security, so there's a win-win, and it gives your team some real cost certainty and at a value proposition. Well, like, look at some other players, and obviously different level, but look at their track record of success, how little time they had spent in the AHL, and how about Juraj Slafkovský's deal signed with the Montreal Canadiens? Mm-hmm. Like, 70-some million dollars, a lot of risk for both ends. And that's where you find that balance of, hey, we're risking that we might be underpaid, but the payoff on the risk is that you put $75 million in your jeans and it's life-changing generational money. And from a team perspective, like, wonder how the Montreal Canadiens felt about that Slafkovský contract, like 40 games into the season, probably not that great. And thinking, hey, did we make a mistake here? And then you watch him play in the playoffs, you watch the second half of the season again, you go, man, this deal is going to age so well.
Yep. And I'm with you. I'm of the opinion that if you can do it and you can convince the players camp to do it, that is the way to go when it comes to a guy like Coronado, who's going to be a franchise piece, maybe not core piece. Yeah, I think he's going to be a really important part of this team as they try to get back to contention.
You want another really good long-term contract? Look at Alex Vlasic in Chicago. I think a top pair defenseman already in this league, signed before he even knew that he was. I think it was 6 times 4.6. And that deal is like an unbelievable home run for the Hawks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. That's 6 times 4.55 was the deal that Rasmus Anderson signed. Very similar going back to, I think it was early 2020, just before COVID, when Raz signed his extension, which, as we know, runs out at the end of next season. One thing that I wanted to ask you about Rasmus before we moved on to some of the other stuff around the league. What's your feel on timing, in that there's a lot of people in this market who believe that, hey, you know, you got to make a decision this summer, and one way or the other, you need to figure out what's going to happen with Rasmus before the start of next season. Where are you on that in terms of whether they're maximizing a trade or getting a contract extension or whatever? Does it have to be done before next season starts?
I think the decision-making part of that process needs to be done, honestly, in the next few weeks here. That said, I don't think that the actual trade itself, if that's the path that you're going down, that needs to materialize. Like, I don't think there's any hard and fast rule on that, because I think the value for Anderson is going to be the same this summer as it will be at next year's trade deadline. I mean, I don't think you get any extra benefit. All you deal with is potentially more teams involved in the conversation, but there should be enough contenders. He plays a premium enough position. He has a chance, actually, in some ways, for the value to increase a little bit if he has a better start to the season, or a more consistent start to the season than he had this year.
Yep.
I see no reason to feel like you have to pull the trigger this summer. But what I think you want to avoid is going into the season unsure about whether or not you want to re-sign him. Either you come to terms on an extension and you put it to bed, or you draw a hard line in the sand and say, hey, it's been unbelievable having you here. We will be trading you at some point in time, whether it's this summer or at some point before next March and the trade deadline. I think the last thing you want to do, given the Flames' situation and where they're at, is shrug and go into the season and say, hey, we'll see how this year plays out. And then you put yourself in a pickle where you're closing in on the deadline, you're in playoff contention,
right,
and you have to pluck a piece off of your roster. That part, I think, is an uncomfortable position that no one wants to be in and no one should be in. You could make that a lot easier by trading him in the summer, but if he plays better again to start, then you might be able to get a hair more. So yeah, it's not about being greedy. I think it's just about putting the team in the best position for success.
Yep, I think that's a good way of putting it. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. Joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk. Okay, let's move to some of the news of the day. It is now official. It felt like he was moving in this direction for a little while, but Rick Tocchet officially out as head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. He will not be returning. What's your understanding on why we're here and why Rick Tocchet will not be back for another season with the Canucks?
I think it's a combination of things. The first part being that I'm not sure that Rick Tocchet was comfortable with the outlook and the future for the Canucks. And it's pretty uncertain in terms of being a competitive team that has a chance to win. I think two, it's the financials, that the Canucks put what they believe is the franchise record offer on the table for a head coach. But that doesn't mean that it's necessarily in line with making him one of the top end paid coaches in the league, which, as the reigning Jack Adams Award winner, at least for the next few weeks, he probably deserved. And then three, I think it's the opportunities that exist on the open market. We've got 8 confirmed openings, vacancies right at this point in time, and the potential for the Islanders and any team that loses in the first round that wants to make a change, they're also on the table. And, you know, I think the amazing part is watching the Vancouver Canucks and how we arrived at this point.
Yeah.
1 year ago, this week, this team was beating the Nashville Predators in their first round series, would get to within 1 game of the Western Conference Final, would have JT Miller and Pettersson and Quinn Hughes at full strength. And to that point, Thatcher Demko hadn't really gone down yet. And then Tocchet goes on to win Coach of the Year after a 109-point season, I think, 111. And now we're here at this point. Miller's gone. Pettersson's a huge question mark. Your head coach is gone. You wonder what the ripple effect is for Quinn Hughes as your unquestioned MVP. And you don't know the future status of Thatcher Demko and whether or not he can be a consistent contributor to your team. I can't imagine. Oh, and by the way, the Canucks didn't make the playoffs. I can't imagine a more difficult 12 months for one team from an on-ice team-building perspective.
It was a nightmare year, and there's still, you know, it feels like there's still more significant decisions to come. Is there a front runner? Like, Rick Tocchet will be in the NHL next year if he wants to. Is there a front runner? Like, is Philly the front runner to land him, or is there another spot that's going to land him that you would put at the top of the power rankings?
Look, I think Rick Tocchet is going to have 6 to 7 openings to choose from. I think we're all kind of making the assumption right now that Mike Sullivan is destined for the New York Rangers.
Okay.
I'd say maybe pump the brakes on that slightly, knowing that Tocchet's available, because I do think that they have a ton of interest in Tocchet as well. But the Flyers, I have no doubt that they're interested. Keith Jones, their president of hockey operations, and Rick Tocchet go way back. And he certainly has an affinity for the Flyers organization. And frankly, they should have hired him a couple years ago as they went through their opening that landed with John Tortorella. And then add in all these other teams that are potential contenders for his services, anywhere from Boston to Anaheim to, hey, maybe there's a team that would step up and fire their coach right now at this moment in time to get him.
How inevitable was it that Mike Sullivan and the Penguins were going to part ways?
I mean, pretty inevitable. I mentioned it as part of the rumor mill 3 to 4 weeks ago on my podcast.
Yep.
That this is one to look out for. I also included Buffalo, and there haven't been any changes there. And I did include the Nashville Predators and Andrew Brunette. There haven't been changes there, but certainly Sullivan and Kyle Dubas wanting to get his own guy in there, I think, and the potential of some mutual change was on the table. And I think it's in the just not all that different than the Canucks. Like, well, maybe different in the sense that you could see it being mutually beneficial for Sullivan, given the options and opportunities that are out there. 3 original 6 franchises making a coaching change at once and better chances to win. I think the tougher part from a Canucks perspective is it's really difficult to envision an environment that's better than the one that Rick Tocchet fostered. And now having to put all the pieces back together with Quinn Hughes, who was really a vocal proponent for Tocchet, I just think the Canucks are lost. And I think if you can't pay your coach to get a deal done and frankly can't be proactive and get ahead of it, I think it just speaks to the dysfunction that exists in the organization. Like, they're in a really difficult position.
Yeah. Do they, with even going back to what Jim Rutherford had to say on their locker cleanout day or when they wrapped up the season, like how much more change do we see in Vancouver?
probably a lot. I mean, they're going to try and be aggressive when it comes to replacing JT Miller, which is going to be hard to do. They're probably going to be pretty aggressive in trying to move Elias Pettersson, who they've been pretty vocal about his off-season commitment and training habits or lack of commitment. And this is a team in flux that it's hard to envision a path back to the playoffs with where they're at this point in time and the holes and flaws that they have on their roster. And to say nothing of a couple free agents who are potentially likely to get away in Pew Suter and then also Brock Besser.
Yeah. 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 The way you laid it out, what a nightmare 12 months or so, or the span of a year since Vancouver went to game 7 against Edmonton to where they are now as a non-playoff team. Couple more with Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. Joins us on Flames Talk every Tuesday. Hey, you saw game 2 in Dallas where the Stars were able to win that game in overtime. They now have a 3-1 series lead on the Colorado Avalanche. How impressed by this Stars group. They've done this without Haskinen and without Robertson, and they've got a 3-1 edge on the Colorado Avalanche. How impressed by this Stars group are you?
Well, 3-2, and you're...
Sorry, 3-2.
You're cutting off the legs of the Colorado Avalanche.
Sorry. 3-2 series lead.
Yeah, all good. I'm just messing with you. It's been very impressive. Honestly, like, I know sometimes we get caught up in these spots where, you know, you're kind of knocking one team and not giving another credit. I just can't help but feel like what a missed opportunity this has been from the Avalanche perspective. Like, it's not just because Haskinen and Robertson aren't there. Like, you're kind of out of excuses when those guys are not in the lineup. But from two different missed opportunity perspectives, well, three really, like, if you go back to that game too that I was at in Dallas last week, like, they had the opportunity to win both games in Dallas to open the series. And all of a sudden the Stars are scrapping, scratching and clawing just to keep their season alive. They were up in the first period, dominated play, had a lead kind of late in the third period as well, couldn't salt it away, and lose in OT. So that's one. Two would be you go home, you get this emotional boost from your captain returning after a 3-year absence, and the Stars get the better of you. And then three would be if you watched game 4 on Saturday night in Denver, I don't know how you would leave the building and not think that the Avs, who were flying and MacKinnon was dominant, that they honestly aren't on a path to win a Stanley Cup. Like, they were that good on Saturday night that you're thinking this team is electric. And then they go and they lose this game 5. I don't understand it. They're not consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on the missed opportunity. And yet, boy, if Dallas goes on to win this series, and then you've got St. Louis or Winnipeg getting ready for that. Do we know when Haskinen and Robertson will be ready to return?
So I was told that Haskinen and the way that this has unfolded with him participating in morning skates, that perhaps the player himself is not as optimistic of a quick return as the team is.
Okay.
You know, I was told very late in the series as a possibility. It feels kind of like a stretch. Like, it feels like a round 2 thing. And I don't even know if it's necessarily off the hop of round 2. But I think that's the exciting part if you're Dallas. Like, I think Robertson's gone for a huge chunk of the playoffs. Like, okay, the way that happened and the way that he's been limping around, like, he doesn't seem anywhere close. But Haskinen's such a game changer for that defense. Like, you look at their ice time and the minutes. Like, Cody Ceci's playing north of 20. Leon Bichelle is down around 11 or 12. Like, they could really use some reinforcements, let alone a player of Haskinen's caliber. So that's the exciting part of your Dallas, that you can, if you can get past Colorado, things start to open up a bit for you, even if the matchup may be just as difficult in round 2 or beyond. you've slayed a pretty big dragon in round one, if that's the case.
What's your feel on this Oilers-Kings series as we wrap up going into game five on Tuesday night?
I would say that the Oilers have had no business being tied in this series. They have gotten their lunch handed to them, or stolen, however you want to frame that, by the Kings for huge chunks of this series. Basically, every first and second period, the Kings have owned handily. And the second half, basically the first 50 minutes of every game, the Kings have owned. And the last 10 minutes in OT, the Oilers have owned. Now, that's a pretty powerful drug to own, particularly when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl performing at the level that they have. And if you're the Oilers, you're thinking, okay, we've gotten some gifts here, being able to draw even in this series. If we could just clean up our game just a little bit for two games, we're in the driver's seat here, and we could potentially get maybe even the Minnesota Wild in round two. That would change the view of the bracket. It's been a tough series to figure out. It feels like it's drunk half the time. And then you look at the goalies, and like Calvin Pickard is starting a third straight game. Like, it's been wild to watch, and it's arguably been the most entertaining series so far.
Enjoy game five of that series. Enjoy a busy Tuesday on the NHL ice, my friend. We'll do it again next week. Thank you, as always, Frank. Great stuff.
Sounds good. See you, Pat.
He's Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk, and he joins us brought to you by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Aaron Vickers with us this week on Flames Talk. Hi, Vix.
Hey, buddy. What's shaking?
Vix on Twitter at AAVickers from NHL.com. Just days before his trip to... How do you get to Stockholm? Is that where you're starting? Or are you starting in Denmark?
I am starting in Copenhagen as a little 2 to 3 day mini vacay before things get underway.
Okay, I need you to tell me how Copenhagen is.
Oh, I can tell you already. It's awesome.
It's on my list of places this summer.
This summer?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
So, would you?
Are you going anywhere in the vicinity and might pop in? Or are you specifically going to Copenhagen?
Well, the flight is booked. I have a couple places that I am going, but I've got like 10 days that I still need to figure out. And Copenhagen's one of them. Anyway, I digress. That's for later. World Championship, of course, is where you'll be going. So Copenhagen, then to Herning, and then to Stockholm?
Yes.
Okay, neat. On the program Monday, you and I got into a really fun conversation about what Matt Coronado's next deal might look like. Long-term, not long-term. I feel like of the pending RFAs that the Flames have to figure out, there's one that tops my list of most difficult, or the very least, the one that maybe is the most difficult to get a full read on, and that is Morgan Frost. Because, you know, I think that Coronado, we were on pretty much the same page, or pretty close to the same page, that, hey, if you can get him to go long-term, then there's a lot to it. Frank Saravalli, same idea. If you can get him to go long term, awesome, but a bridge deal isn't the worst thing in the world if that's what it comes to. I think Zeri is a guaranteed bridge when it's all said and done. I don't think there's two or three years bridge contract, show me, and let's reevaluate. I think that's what we're talking about almost certainly when it comes to Connor Zeri. You can probably go 5 or 6 years pretty easily on Kevin Ball, because I think you've got a pretty good idea what he is at the age of 24, 25. But what the heck do you do with Morgan Frost? Because, and as we dive into that for the rest of the hour, I still don't know what Morgan Frost is as a member of the Calgary Flames. Acquired from Philly right at the end of January, ended up playing 32 games as a member of the Flames, racked up 3 goals, 12 points in those 32 games when it's all said and done. fair to say that was below expectations in terms of what he was looking to do, what the Flames were looking for him to do, what fans were hoping he would do? I know for me it was below expectations when it comes to what we saw from Frost in his, you know, third of a season as a member of the Flames.
I'm going to try to say this respectfully because I think the output in terms of what he produced as a member of the Flames didn't quite necessarily match the eye test. But the fact of the matter remains, 12 points in 32 games, just 3 goals in 32 games. Over an 82-game schedule, those Flames numbers extrapolate to 31 points over an 82-game schedule. 8 goals over an 82-game schedule. Do I think he's an 8-goal, 31-point player? No. And even in Philly, where we all know that there was some consternation, if that's the right word, with the head coach, and they were, him and Joel Farabee both weren't super excited about how things were going in Philly, even his Philly numbers worked out to 18 goals and 42 points over an 82-game schedule. So this is, to me, what makes a lot of this really tricky when we get into discussing what does Morgan Frost's next contract look like, coming off of a 2-year deal with an AAV of 2.2. What does the next deal look like? Yeah. Like, what does the player want? What does the team want?
What does that term look like?
Is there term?
There has to be some term because he's UFA next summer. So it has to be more than 1 year. Or maybe you do. I don't know. Maybe you do walk him to UFA. Let's hear a little bit from Morgan. This was Morgan Frost on Locker Cleanout Day. It gives us a little time to wrap our head around what a contract might look like. No, we thought about it before. But this was Morgan Frost, a little bit from him on Locker Cleanout Day about a week and a half ago.
I feel like when I first got here, I thought I was playing some of my best hockey, and then kind of went through a bit of a dull period, and then I feel like the last couple of games I did a lot of good things, so bit up and down, but I was happy with the way the team finished, to be honest. So
being traded midseason, how hard is it to go from one city to another, from one team to another, and do you feel like an off season might help you really be at your best when training camp and the preseason starts?
Having a full camp, just a summer to prepare for sure. I think so. I can't really speak to it before. I haven't been traded, so it was it was weird for a little while for sure. Different feeling, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I feel like I'm happy to be here, and the group of guys were great. Everyone was. You know, the staff, everyone, management was great in welcoming us, and I had a ton of fun since I came here. So it was a different experience, but I think it happened for the better.
When the numbers probably weren't quite what you wanted during your stretch here, why do you think that was?
I mean, it could be attributed to a lot of things. I think there was a stretch where I was getting. It felt like every game I was getting a handful of grade A opportunities, and just couldn't put the puck in the net. And I mean, like you said, I would have liked to put up some better numbers, but at the same time, I feel like I did some of the smaller things to help the team win, and the team went on a good run down the year, and we should be in the playoffs right now. So I'm more proud of that than. And my individual stats, yeah.
So that's a little bit from Morgan Frost when he spoke on Locker Cleanout Day about a week and a half ago. So RFA turns 26 in about 2 weeks. He'll be eligible for UFA next summer. So the rule on unrestricted free agency is either 7 years of accrued time, which means if you start in the NHL as an 18-year-old, you can get to UFA as early as 25 or 27. So he will be 27 when next year's unrestricted free agency period opens July 1st, 2026, which means he is a year away from unrestricted free agency. So that's if you don't want to walk him to UFA. And who knows? I mean, the Flames did that with Nikita Zadorov a few years ago. They had no problem walking him to UFA. He went and tested UFA and then came back and signed with the Flames. Maybe with this guy that they'd be fine with it. I don't know. But like, what the heck do you do with this deal? Because I still don't know exactly what Frost is. I think I've got a pretty good idea of what Morgan Frost is. He's never scored 20 in this league, but he's been close. He had 19 the one season. His career high is, what, 46 points when it's all said and done? As you said, 2.1, not 2.2. That's my bad. 2.1 on his AAV on a two-year deal that's now completed. So, he's been a 19-goal scorer once. He's gone over 40 points twice in back-to-back seasons. I'm uncertain how much more development there is from a forward about to turn 26. I think somewhere between 40 and 50 points is probably what you're looking at when it comes to Frost at kind of like if he's in a groove and doing what you think he can at or around his ceiling. I think a 40 to 50 point number two, number three center who can get you 15 to 20 goals in a year. That's probably what we're looking at. And yet the body of work of 32 games, a member of the Flames, pretty underwhelming. But I think for reasons, you know, the Tortorella hangover, both him and Joel Farabee definitely experienced that. So you've got the hangover there, the new team, the adjustment, all that type of stuff. I think we will see a better Frost next year. So are you projecting a 40-plus point guy over the next few years for Morgan Frost? Is that how you'd see it?
Yeah, and to be honest, I just from the eye test and getting to see him up close, like, I don't think 50 should be a stretch. I think 50 should be the expectation he puts on himself. But the catch with that is, you mentioned, how much more runway does he have to develop? He's played 310 career NHL games. He hit that career high 46 points in 2022-23, then 41 the next season, then 37 combined this season with Calgary and Philly. That's trending the wrong way. I can excuse the Tortorella hangover and the new thing. I get that. I feel like he should be a 50-point player, but he's never done it. He's never been a 20-goal scorer, as you mentioned, tiptoed around it with 19. For all these reasons, and from player and team perspective, this isn't a situation where I think either camp would be really thrilled to go long-term, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Flames, I don't think you can go long-term. I think if you're Frost,
I don't think you want to go long-term either. If you believe that you can be a 50 to 60 point guy, and now that you're away from Tortorella, now that you've had time to digest the trade,
when
and
you say long,
Calgary,
what's long-term in this conversation?
4+ is long-term for me.
Cause yeah, 3 or 4 is about as much as I,
if I believe in myself as a player and I've gone 46, 41, 37 and believe I can be a 50, a 20 goal, 30 assist guy. I don't want to get locked into a long-term deal where I feel like I'm going to be undervalued, but you also don't have the leverage of saying I'm a 20-goal, 50-point guy because you haven't done it.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 is probably your sweet spot when it comes to this contract.
From a team perspective?
From a team perspective. Okay. And I mean, honestly, because Frost doesn't have a ton of leverage here, I don't think, like, he probably is going to be okay with a 3 or 4 year term as well. That gets you to 29, 30, probably gets you another multi-year contract. If you're still performing at a, you know, 45, say you're a 45 point guy. If you can do that over the course of the next 3-4 years, if that's what the deal ends up looking like, then I think you're probably okay with that. Then it comes down to, what does that dollar figure look like? I think you're probably in, I know the cap's going up, but at this stage, you're paying more for what Frost has done than what he's going to do. It's kind of at that weird age where you're no longer projecting and you're more paying on what
you're not banking on his potential being a 30 goal, 70 point guy and tapping into that. Like,
you're more looking at him like a 45, right? Like Coronado, you're paying for what you think he's going to do. For Frost, it's more like, okay, you're kind of close to what you are.
Right.
What is that? So, would you do here? So that as I wrap my head around it, are you doing 4 years at 4.25, 4 years at 4 years at 4.5, something like that? Is that kind of what you're looking at right now for a contract with him?
If I'm the team or if I'm Morgan Frost myself?
Just kind of both, honestly.
If I'm Morgan Frost, and this might be the gamble of all gambles, my best case scenario is a 1 year. And I know it takes me to unrestricted free agency, but I know the opportunity I'm going to get in Calgary, and now I'm settled, and now I'm ready to focus on what the task at hand is.
Now, why would the Flames walk
into UFA? I said if I were Morgan Frost, that would be my best case scenario.
Because they went out and targeted him, right? Like,
right.
They feel like he can be a long-term
They feel like he can be a second-line center for this group.
Yeah.
So from a team perspective, the team wouldn't. But I'm saying if I'm Morgan Frost, that would be objective number one, I think, because I see the opportunity. I believe in myself. I know the numbers don't reflect the player that I am, and I have an opportunity here. And that's not to even just say I'm going to go walk as an unrestricted free agent. It's just it's setting me up for that next contract, whether that's with the Flames before
He'd have to know that that doesn't work for anybody other than him.
Well, yeah, in theory, I'm just saying from a player perspective, that's where I started. From a team perspective, I don't know if I would do anything longer than three. Just because, okay, well, we think you're this, but we haven't seen this in two seasons from you.
So, okay, as a player, you're probably okay with three. That gets you to 29, gives you some decent runway with a full training camp right from the beginning of the new contract, gives you a decent runway to try to put up some decent numbers.
Yeah, and if I'm the player, though, I want that number to...
And then gets you to UFA at 29.
I want that number to start somewhere around 4.5-ish. I don't know if Aaron Vickers, the general manager, would pay Aaron Vickers, the player, 4.5 on a 3-year deal for the body of work we've seen.
So you're buying two UFA years.
Correct.
If you're doing 3 years. Yeah, I think on a 3 or 4 year deal, somewhere between 4 and 4.5 is probably what you're looking at.
So here's the other caveat here, though. Who else is going to play center for this team in 2 to 3 years? Like, realistically, you don't know what the center position looks like, and your top two centers are on the back half of 35.
Yeah, Kadri's 35 in October.
Yeah.
And Backlund's 36 right now. And Backlund's only got a year left on his deal. So
we don't know necessarily if Connor Zary is a full-time center in the NHL. We certainly didn't get enough of a runway to gauge that this past season. So maybe there's some player leverage on that front. And we know the Flames, as you mentioned, went out and specifically targeted him because, one, they see the upside in him, but two, he plays center. You had a deficiency in that position. I think I can wrap my head around from a team and a player perspective, three. If I'm the player and truly believe that I can be a 20-goal, 50-point guy or 20-goal, 60-point guy,
yeah,
I might skew a little bit to two, but you have that extra security.
Two will be cheaper because you're only buying one UFA a year. You could probably go 2x3.5, 2x4, something like that if you wanted to do that.
As a team, is that too short of a term for you, though, the 2 year? Or does it give you enough balance to
What it does is it gives you kind of like it gives you the opportunity to re-up or to reconvene in a year's time, still with a year of team control left, or makes them a really attractive trade target if they want to go down that road. I guess I wouldn't mind 2 years because you do buy the one UFA year. So then in a year's time, say Frost goes out and has a career year, scores 21 goals and has 52 points. Well, now you're like, okay, so we got one more year at four. Let's think about doing a 4-year extension. Is that a 4x5.5 or something? Like I don't mind a 2 year.
Okay.
I might want to go see if I can go 3, but I mean, honestly, this is such a...
Too bad you don't have a club option anymore, eh?
I know, hey? Only on coaches.
That would be well, we all know that works out.
Yeah. Rick Tockett still... No, I'm going
to
go
team option to come back. Yeah, you know what? That's not going to work for me.
Are you going to put that team option?
Anyways.
Yeah, this is one of the harder ones to get a definitive feel on, right? Like, you know, with Coronado, go 7 or 8 if you can. Otherwise, 2-year bridge, that's great. Reconvene in 2 years, awesome. Connor Zary, 2-year bridge. But what, this one is so hard to wrap your head around because we don't know what the player is as of yet as a member of the Flames.
And the hard part for me here is I kind of want Frost to bet on himself. Like, I really, truly believe that the 3 goals and 12 points that we saw in 32 games isn't indicative of the player he is.
Okay, but are you betting on yourself to be a 45-point guy again, or are you betting on yourself to be a 55-point guy?
I'm betting on myself to be a 50 to 55 point guy.
Which he is yet to do.
Correct. And he is 26, turning 27. Hmm. Or sorry, 25 turning 26.
Yeah, he'll be 26 in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Man, it's fascinating. Let's get to the text line at 960, 960. Derek in Cochrane says, Pat, can you explain what buying UFA years means? So essentially, what you do when you buy a UFA year is you're getting a guy under contract for X amount of years when their UFA eligibility would begin. So in Frost's case, his first UFA year is 26-27. So he's eligible for unrestricted free agency on July 1st, 2026. So any years that you buy beyond this season or that you have him under contract for beyond this season, which is his final year of non-UFA eligibility, would be quote-unquote buying a UFA year. So with Coronado, he's not UFA for quite some time. So if you buy if you make an eight-year deal with Coronado, you're buying four UFA years off the top of my head because he's not eligible for unrestricted free agency. He's 23 now, or is he still 22?
No, he's still 22.
When's he turn 23?
Let's find out. Actually, yeah, 22 turns 23 November 14th.
Okay, so he's not eligible for UFA for five more years. So you sign an eight with Coronado, you're buying three UFA years, and each UFA year you buy, especially when you're signing a younger player, the cap hit goes up because you're quote unquote taking away.
You're taking them off the open market.
Exactly. In a prime earning year as an unrestricted free agent. So that's what we mean by buying UFA years. This says Frost reminds me of the David Moss or Matthew Lombardi situations. Good. Just can't seem to break through that ceiling and be better. Another 2 year deal at $3.5 million sounds fair. And I think if you're going to sign a two, I think 3.5 to four is the range that you're probably in on a 2 year deal.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. And I would lean again. It's funny because I'm the champion of the independent contractor just by nature of how my life is structured. But then I look at it from a team's perspective. I'm like, ooh, I would really need that to be 3.5. Like it's my money. Like I'm the GM or the owner spending cash. Hilarious to me.
Brett says Calgary should sign him to a 3x3. Wouldn't go any more than that. You might have to go a little bit more on the dollar
figure.
I do
think you'd have to go north on
that. To get 3 years, I think you're going to have to go 4+. And to get 4 years, you're probably going to need to be in the mid-fours, even into 4.75 would be my guess. This reads, unless they're a specialist, like a face-off guy, penalty killer, or goal scorer, $100,000 per point usually is a fair contract. $4 to $5 million for Frost seems fair to me. That's probably a decent range.
Yeah, you know what? That's not a bad way to look at it.
This says I'd be willing to gamble a bit. 3 years at 4.25. That comes from Michael. This says from Lars. What are they paying Farabee? Well, they didn't sign the contract on Farabee, so it's kind of a unfair comparison. But he's at 4.5 himself. Is that right?
Joel Farabee is in at five million.
5 mil for three more years after this season.
If I'm not mistaken, that was signed after a 50 goals or 50 point season.
Yeah.
So kind of in that production range anyway that we're talking about what Frost might be in and around.
And finally from Heath, guys, you got to look past the last 32 games. Frost is a young player with upside. He's a great skater and has clear potential. The Flames were lucky to get him, and if they don't lock him up at a reasonable price, they're making a mistake. Young talent needs some support. That's just part of the deal, which is why I would like to see more than 2 years. I just don't know if I can go any more than 4 years on a guy like Frost because I still don't know what he is.
And again, thinking from the player perspective, I don't think I want a 4 year deal if I believe that I can show better and cash in quicker.
Yep.
That's what makes this whole thing kind of tricky to navigate.
Agreed. Steinberg Vickers. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. In fact, we're starting to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Vergie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers. Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.